The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, a very good morning to you. 6 minutes past nine this Friday, the 12th of January, 2024. And you're very welcome along to another edition of the 9 till noon show. And it's a busy one coming up after 10. We'll have an extensive conversation with the Green Party leader, Eamon Ryan. He's in Donegal for a number of engagements, primarily to meet with Donegal County Council. I had a chat with him a little earlier on and touched on many of the main issues of the day. So stay tuned for that. That's after 10. But between now and then, we have a review of the news with our guests, our Friday panel. We'll say good morning first to Leonard Watson, owner of Watson's Menswear Letterkenny. Good morning, Leonard. Thank you so much for joining us.
Morning, Greg. Thank you.
It's great to have you on board again. Paddy Rooney is PRO of Friends of Letterkenny University Hospital. Good morning, Paddy.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
Great, and good to have you with us. And Senator Lisa Chambers, leader of the Shannon and spokesperson on European and Foreign Affairs with Fianna Fáil. Good morning to you, Lisa. Thanks, as always, for your time.
Morning.
Just reading this morning, the government is deeply concerned Israel may have committed war crimes in Gaza and could play a role should the International Court of Justice order a ceasefire while it deliberates South Africa's action alleging genocide in the enclave. Taoiseach Leo Varadkar has said. I just wonder from your perspective, particularly given your portfolio, Lisa, I mean, Ireland has taken quite a strong stance on this issue, but we heard from a group of senators on this programme and others as well that we really should be more forthright in our backing of what South Africa is trying to achieve. Do you believe Israel is involved in a genocide and should Ireland toughen up its position?
Yeah, I mean, I think overall, since the beginning of this conflict in October, I think the Irish government have been quite strong and certainly have stood out from the crowd in terms of a European perspective. It's so much has happened between the beginning of this and where we are today. But even at the very outset, there was moves at the time at a European level to cut off funding, EU funding to Palestine, if you can believe that, at the very outset following October 7th. And Ireland was one of only four member states that blocked that. So from the very beginning, we have been very strong in supporting the Palestinian people. And, you know, obviously acknowledging on what happened on October 7th was horrific. But what has happened since is just unjustifiable. And I think, you know, the Taoiseach and the Taoiseach in particular on the international stage have certainly been out on their own at times in terms of their commentary, in their condemnation of Israel. And the Taoiseach saying that it looked like revenge, or I'm paraphrasing slightly. But, you know, at the time, that was very strong language because that was earlier on in what's been going on. And I welcome the Taoiseach's comments that we can do something to support South Africa, hoping that the ICJ make the right call and look for a ceasefire. He did also acknowledge that a similar direction was given to Russia in regards to Ukraine, and they chose to ignore it. And it is possible that if a similar direction is given from the ICJ to Israel, that they may very well ignore that. And that is a possibility. But
that becomes very interesting then, doesn't it, in terms of the relationship with the United States and the backing, I suppose you could call it, at this stage of the EU. That would be a very big decision for Israel to take.
It would, and I suppose part of the context is the political situation in Israel and Benjamin Netanyahu, and he's got a very extreme right-wing elements in his government, and I would say he's on that side himself. And politically for him, what happened on October 7th really kind of spelled the end of his career in politics, and he knows it. So there is a domestic element within Israel that's feeding into this extreme, aggressive and murderous response on the part of Israel. But you're right. If there was a direction from the ICJ that there should be an immediate ceasefire while matters are further investigated, and if Israel were to choose to ignore that, you know, the point has been made by the US and the EU that Israel is a Western democracy, that it is a democracy. And we expect certain things from countries like that. So I do think they would find themselves with even fewer friends than they have now. Mm-hmm. And there's no doubt about it. There's a limit to what Ireland can do as a small country, as a member of the European Union.
Exactly, there is a limit.
Our stance makes
it all the more important. There is this feeling, and you're not here to defend you're not invited, as you know yourself, you're not invited to defend government policy or attitudes. That's not the purpose of it. We want your views, Lisa. But it just so happens that these are the issues we talk of. There is mm-hmm. this sense that, yes, Ireland is taking a stance, but it's been very diplomatic in that it doesn't want to either sort of get on the wrong side of Brussels or Washington for that matter. And this is of a scale, though, that I really would hope that the people that represent us ensure that we as a nation aren't seen in the future to be on the wrong side of history, because it seems to be very clear what's going on, and sort of trying to remain, keep diplomatic connections strong at the expense of maybe doing the right thing. Is that really representing the feelings of the Irish people?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Irish people, we've always had a very strong connection with Palestine because of our own history and our own conflict on the island and being colonised. I think we've always had that affinity with Palestine, and that predates this conflict. And that's very much evident from, I can tell you, and ask any member of the Oireachtas currently, our inbox is full with emails about Gaza. And there's a huge number of people getting in contact. And it shows you there are very few international issues that dominate the domestic political agenda in this country, and this is one of them. So the Irish government are under no illusions as to where the people in this country stand. I think what the Irish government have been trying to do is to kind of toe that line between remaining a credible voice for peace, having access to the EU table and the US table, and to be able to talk to those that can influence an outcome here. And let's be honest about it, the US really is the only country that can really influence Israel at this point in time, I believe, and the EU to a lesser extent. So Ireland has been trying to maintain its connections, its diplomatic connections, so that it can have some influence. But I think at all times has very much pushed to the boundaries and really kind of made people uncomfortable, and rightly so. But certainly it's very clear what's happening to the Gazan people, and an entire population has been displaced. The UN has cited Gaza now as being uninhabitable. Their health system is on its knees, and there are the thousands of children. The majority of those that have been killed are children, and nobody can stand over that. And Israel will have to account for itself, because they are war crimes in my view. So I think the hearing yesterday was historic. I think South Africa did the world community a great service yesterday. And I, we'll hear from Israel today, and I'm sure that'll be, that'll be difficult to listen to. But I do certainly hope that the ICJ do issue a direction for a ceasefire, because it will put Israel under pressure to try and maintain friends internationally, because they will need it. And in reality, Greg, the only way that we're going to have peace between Palestine and Israel, and that there's going to be security for both states, is if there are peace talks and the bombs and the guns get put down. And our country knows that better than anybody else.
Yeah.
That's the only time you'll have peace.
The problem is Israel doesn't seem to be of the same mind as the international community.
Nor do Hamas either. I mean, Hamas needs to stop bombing as well, and peace talks need to happen. But unfortunately, I would agree, I don't think we're there yet for both sides to get around the table. But it's the only solution.
Understood.
It's the only solution.
Paddy Rooney, what's your view on Ireland's stance? Do you think we have gone far enough, or could we have taken a stronger stance? And when I say we, obviously I'm speaking of those who speak on our behalf. Now, many people listening will say they don't, but on an international scale, they do.
Well, in fairness, I suppose, to the Irish government, Greg, that they have been out ahead of a lot of the other governments in Europe and in the European Union about criticising or being critical of Israel's behaviour in Palestine. And I suppose there are other countries now slowly but surely coming round to Ireland's view on this. If you can't use persuasion and argument to encourage the likes, or to impress upon the likes of America to impress on Israel to stop what they're doing, well, I suppose the next thing that you must use is some kind of shock tactics. There was a very interesting and disturbing interview on the Drive Time programme on RT yesterday evening, when Sarah McInerney interviewed a guy called Nick Maynard. He's a surgeon in the NHS in England, and he spent 2 weeks in Gaza. And Lisa said there in her contribution, rightfully, that the health service in Gaza is on its knees. But he said that he was expecting a very dire situation in Gaza before he went out there. But when he got there and he was able to navigate his way through all the broken roads and broken buildings and the congestion, so on and so forth, and he got to the hospitals, he described the situation as apocalyptic. And he was talking about the disproportionate amount of children who are coming to hospitals because their parents and adults have all been killed. and with very severe burns, and in many, many cases, about traumatic amputations of their limbs, their arms and their legs. And the orthopedic surgeons were taking off the rest of the limb or surgically reconstructed without any antiseptic, right? So there was no pethidine or no analgesia. There was no anesthesia. There was no running water that a surgeon down the road in the hospital could take for granted. They were using alcohol and any kind of spirits they could use to disinfect their hands. They had no antiseptic drapes. I mean, it was just absolutely dreadful what he was describing. And he made the point that with all of the Western media that's in Gaza, but they're failing to get across, because when he came home, he expected to see this on BBC News and Sky News, and he didn't see it. And he said that even at their best endeavours, that they're failing to report how bad the situation is. And he described it as apocalyptic. And he said that he saw images that he was involved in things that are never going to leave him. And this is a guy that he's a surgeon now, so he's seen all types of things. And what's more, he said, but because the level of congestion around hospitals and people living so close to each other, and there's no running water, there's no sanitation, he says we are a hair's breadth away from an outbreak of cholera in Gaza. And if that happens, the 25,000 people that have been so far killed in it, that number will be doubled in the space of days if that ever happens. And nothing is being done. Any, the level of aid that's getting in, as much as it is, but it's only a trickle getting into it, and it's nothing in comparison to what needs to be there. And if Israel isn't going to listen to this, the only person or people that they will listen to is America. And somebody somewhere is going to have to get that into Joe Biden's mind and Antony Blinken's mind. And they're going to have to go to Israel and take them to heel before somebody else does.
A leading Irish barrister told the International Court of Justice, the conflict in Gaza is the first genocide in history where its victims are broadcasting their own destruction in the desperate, so far vain hope the world might do something. And that world really, I suppose, to some extent feeds to Paddy's point there in, you know, Biden and his administration, Leonard. Do you believe the Irish government should be going further? I mean, it is impossible to put into words, and Paddy has done an excellent job in sort of painting the horrendous conditions and position and what's going on. And I would say that's probably even only the tip of the iceberg, Leonard.
Do you know what? Sorry, Greg. Lisa used a word there that Leo Varadkar used, revenge. And this is totally revenge. They're, you know, to me, it's, they're just trying to wipe them. They've always said that they wanted Israel wiped off the map. Well, Israel's trying to wipe Palestine off the map now. It's I think the government, in fairness to them, they have spoke out when other governments, the UK and the US, have been great backers of Israel. I think now they're finding out that maybe that was unjustified, or it was they give too much support. The UK is kind of rolling back because the Republic is rolling back. They're horrified at what's going on over there. You have to feel in the US it's the same way. Like, it's, but there's no winners here. Like, it's just, as Lisa said, the amount of children. Like, what's going to be left for these people when this is all sorted out? There's going to be absolutely nothing left. You'll just be a barren.
Well, it seems part of the strategy is also where the population has been expelled or moved to actually wipe out anything to return to.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. There's going to be nothing to come back to. Like. And everybody knows Gaza's population of children is huge. Like. So what lives have we for these children now as well? Like, it's just, it's horrific to, you know, and we're all sitting watching this going on every day, like, and nobody is saying stop. Like, as Lisa says, both sides have to stop the bombings, and they have to talk. Like, we see what happened in this country over 30 years. Like, there was no winners. Like, you know, peace is only option. Like.
Okay, we'll be back with more from our guests after these messages. Stay right where you are. You can watch the programme on your smart TV, your Fire Stick, on the YouTube YouTube app, Highland Radio Ireland. You can take that on your mobiles as well and watch us across Facebook, Highland Hub, Highland Radio News and Sport. We are in the company of our Friday panel today, Paddy Rooney, PRO of Friends of Letterkenny University Hospital, Leonard Watson, owner of Watson's Menswear Letterkenny, but he does much more than that too, of course. Senator Lisa Chambers, leader of the Shannon and spokesperson on European and Foreign Affairs with Fianna Fáil. The government has been accused of doing U-turns on accommodation for international protection applicants, the male ones in particular, because of public pressure. We've seen it on a couple of occasions whereby there's documentation issued to local public representatives and it outlines what the accommodation will be used for and what have you. It's leaked to the public. There becomes a bit of a movement online often, and then we see a protest. Now, what happened in the two most recent cases that very quickly the profile of the residents went from the men to families, and there's accusations that this is the government effectively buckling to public pressure. Eamon Ryan this morning, we'll hear from it later, the latest minister to say that, look, things just move very quickly. It's got nothing to do with that. It just was pure coincidence on both occasions. I'll start with you again on this, Senator Lisa Chambers. I mean, it's very difficult for the public to swallow that an announcement is made, there's public protest, the government changed their mind, but they say they're not changing their mind. It's a very fluid situation. What do you believe the truth is?
If you're looking at it from the outside, it looks as though there was a mind change. The only reason that I would suggest that, priority is given to women and children. So if women and children had come in those couple of days and they didn't have accommodation, they would get it if the accommodation hadn't been previously filled. And the government are very aware that if they start to adjust their policy, that it'll be almost impossible to house refugees. So for that reason, and I'm not party to these conversations, so I don't know what conversations happened with Roderick O'Gorman and the other government ministers, but they certainly wouldn't want to be seen to be backtracking on the face of public protest and pressure, because it makes their job impossible. So for that reason alone, it is quite likely that they just had women and children and they had come along in those couple of days and they got the position or got the places because they were still vacant. But that doesn't stop it looking as though it was a change of mind because of protest. So people will have to make up their own minds on that, and they will. And it doesn't really matter what I say or what Eamon Ryan says on that front. But apart from that, you know, we've got protests now, I think, in Tipperary last night. Obviously, we had protests in my own county in Mayo last week. And we had the issue in Galway, and there's been issues in Dublin. So it's nationwide. This is a big challenge for us as a country to deal with migration and how we deal with people fleeing war and really horrendous situations. And then we look at those 14 people that came in on the back of a freezer truck that, you know, thank God they got here alive. So it's a very challenging situation. But something that I have been consistently raising, and I've said it on this show, I think even well into early part of last year, is the use of tourist accommodation to house refugees as a long-term solution. It cannot be a long-term solution because it's having an impact on the tourism sector in rural areas. And we know in Donegal, 50% of bed nights are gone for housing refugees. I think in Mayo it's about 35, maybe close to 40. Same in Galway. So you're looking along the Western Seaboard, where, you know, our tourism sector really kind of only comes into action kind of really from Patrick's weekend to the October bank holiday weekend. It's seasonal. So that's a challenge for us to deal with. And I welcome what Minister Ryan had said a couple of days ago. I'm sure he probably said it to you again this morning, that they are moving towards larger reception centres, because dealing with small private providers who we know, and you know in Donegal, and I can see it in Mayo as well, people are making a lot of money off going around scouting out vacant and abandoned buildings, flipping them around, put a roof and four walls up, and Bob's your uncle, you've got accommodation for people. And it's very lucrative. And because of that, we're seeing small rural towns where you might have the hotel that maybe isn't full that much, and somebody's being offered a lot of money and you're full every day of the week. It's difficult to say no to that because it might help pay the bills and pay the staff. So we need to move away from using tourist accommodation. The larger reception centres will make it much easier to handle. And we need to move away from engaging with small private ad hoc providers that are going around speculating on buildings in large parts of the west of Ireland, to be quite honest about it. And that will make it easier to deal with, I think. I think there was a lot of tolerance given last year in what I would consider the emergency phase of this, where the numbers coming in just exploded and we'd never had anything like it. And people said, look, we have to do the right thing and this is an emergency situation. I think what the public are looking for now is a more sustainable, less chaotic approach, one where it's planned in advance, it looks like we're organised, like we're in control, and that it isn't just coming in the dark of night, have you got a building? Grand, we'll take it. And the government have reacted to that. And I think also the cabinet decision in the latter part of last year, and the legislation is coming through this month to reduce the welfare rates for those coming in as refugees. I think from if you were coming in from Ukraine, you were getting the full social welfare job seekers benefit. That's been brought back down now to €39. So it just encourages people to get out and work where they can work. And I think that was The government listening to people and responding and saying, yeah, that was a pull factor. We've addressed it and we're going to try and move into what I would see now as the medium term phase of this, because the war in Ukraine still rages. That's not going to end anytime soon. We have people migrating from other parts of the world because of climate change and other conflicts. So we're just going to have to find a better, less chaotic way of dealing with this. And I think you're going to see that now.
Okay. And before I just bring the other two in, just a little bit of breaking sports news, if you don't mind, because it's quite a big deal. And I don't want to dilute this important issue as well. But Jim McGuinness will no longer have to serve an 8-week ban. Following a request by Jim McGuinness to the Ulster Hearings Committee, the County Secretary has been informed that the alleged infraction, this is playing an underaged player, was not proven and that no further disciplinary action is to be taken. So that means that Jim McGuinness will not serve any ban at all. And the team and county and Jim can look forward to the McKenna Cup semi-final against Monaghan on Sunday. So, sorry, I just wanted to bring that to people who may not be aware. Leonard Watson... I mean, does it matter if the government's U-turned or not? I suppose this is just the latest, point of interest in a greater topic, really. The majority of people, if you look at the way questions are worded, the majority of people are opposed to unlimited immigration. They want assurances about people being checked as they arrive into the country, and they want to also make sure that there are services in particular areas to support an increase in population. I think that's the real view and not necessarily the extreme view from one way or the other. I'm open to correction on that.
But see, Greg, that's my point I was just going to make. You know, over the last year and a half, I would say maybe 10,000 have come into Donegal. Our services haven't increased. You know, even there's children come in with special needs and that. Our services, as you know, are under extreme pressure with 50% vacancy rates. We have a housing crisis. You know, there's like when we all have to do our bit, and everybody got about Ukraine out there, but when's enough in a certain area? At one stage last year, Donegal had the third highest amount of refugees and asylum seekers in the country. Like, so there's a total disparity across the country. Like, you know, we have a housing crisis, you know, and again, the HSE up here, with issues and that there. But there's just no joined up thinking. There's no talking to the community. I would actually say putting 50 young men into any building, doesn't matter where they're from, would be an issue for some people.
Do you think men are routinely that dangerous?
No, men are. But you know what, Greg? If this was 50 English men, would people have as big an issue? Probably wouldn't. Like, but I'm just like I know. I was chatting to a businessman there recently. He has a business in another town, in another county, I'd not say. But he was saying, a lot of these young men, but he says they're not causing any bother, but they're just hanging around the streets and they have nothing to do. You know, these people should be given something to do. Like, they're a perfect example. I see on a Sunday morning in Letterkenny. No, these aren't asylum seekers. These are what I would call the new Irish, the tidy towns. I would say 80% of the people down, you know, doing the tidy town work are foreigners. Like, and it's brilliant to see that. See them try to integrate into the community, become part of the community. And that's what we should be aiming towards. So if these people come in, process them as quick as possible. Get them out and get them working. You know, we have a labour shortage in certain sectors. And if these people aren't meant to be here, we need to move them back on. But it's just everything is too slow.
Yeah, it has sped up somewhat, though. I think the turnaround times are much shorter than they were in the past. But I take your point. Paddy, you know, the bottom line is we've seen, what is it, over 20 arson attacks on accommodation. We're seeing, you know, protests being organised very, very quickly. We are seeing services under pressure. Lisa's pointing to a future whereby we've gone through the emergency part of this now and we go into a more managed position. That's what the government wants. Do you think this will settle down?
Oh, not at all. It's not going to settle down. Lisa's actually taken some of my lines there. So anyway,
sorry.
I don't want to repeat what she has correctly said already. I think that we are not.
I just point out, by the way, that we don't give people lines, and that was just a throwaway. That was a throwaway. We're not controlled media. That was a throwaway remark from Paddy Rooney. Continue, Mr. Rooney.
Don't worry. I think that we are in the phase now where we're not having a mature, grown up. Discussion about this, and we are talking about this as a today problem. My wife and I were over in London before Christmas, and we happened to take a taxi ride, and the guy that was driving the taxi was from Turkey, and he was telling me that there are 4 million Syrian refugees in Turkey, And if people want to think that Ireland is going to escape that, they're very, very badly mistaken. We had the Arab uprising within the last 10 years, and it started off in Egypt and went the whole way along to the Moroccan border. And the end result or byproduct of that is millions of people are on the move. And Lisa talked about the conflict in the Middle East, and we've had the conflict in Afghanistan and so on and so forth. Whether we like it or not, many people who are fleeing poverty or climate change adjustments or persecution or death or destruction or whatever it is, Ireland is now a destination of choice for a lot of those people, whether we like it or not. And we think we have a problem today. I would suspect in 25 years' time, the profile of our population is going to be very, very different than it is at the moment. I mean, Ireland in land size...
Is that something we should be discussing?
Absolutely, because
it's not, you know, to say that it is not a fait accompli either. Presumably there are policies that, because if that were to change, who's to say the impact it might have on things like tourism and what have you? It just because the product would change. I'm not saying people would not come here for any particular reason. Like, how do we have that conversation then, Paddy, to say that, look...
Well, I'll tell you, Greg, we're going way beyond that now, because we're going way beyond that. This is going to happen whether we like it or not. The Dubliners had a hit single in the 1960s with, thank God we're surrounded by water. Well, Britain is surrounded by water. And one of the premises around the Brexit referendum in 2016 was that they were going to stop inward migration to Britain and that they were going to deport a lot of the illegal people that were there. Nobody has been deported. And the level of migration, illegal migration into Britain has accelerated since that. We can't stop it, because people are going to come to this country by fair or foul means. It is a very lucrative market and business now for people that are involved in the business of moving people, not trafficking them, but moving them. And they're going to come, and they're going to come in big numbers, whether we like it or not. And I don't think there is anything that this state can do. France can't do it. Germany can't do it. Britain are not able to do it. Why would we be able to do it? They're coming, and they're coming in large numbers. And I have...
Well, people would have it that...
Just make this point now. What I know Lisa was talking about, people, housing people here and there and so on and so forth. And that's fine, and there's problems with that. But I can tell you now, we are sowing the seeds of huge problems down the line about having these, building these very large reception centres or whatever you want to call them. Because you're going to have a situation now, for instance, where you can have a reception centre. I don't know what the population of these or how much they can accommodate. But you imagine a reception centre with 400 and 500 people from Libya or somewhere in it, and what they're going to do. I mean, what we're going to do here is like a Harlem that ended up accidentally in New York. We're going to end up with ghettos in this country that people are going to be placed conveniently in there. And it's going to be like what happened in Ballymun back in the 60s and so on and so forth. We are sowing seeds of huge problems coming down the line if we do not do three things. One, we accept that people are coming and we can't do anything about it, because that's what's going to happen. We have to assimilate them into society. And that means that they're not all placed in North Dublin, that they're everywhere in Gweedore and Dingle and Wexford, and they're assimilated into society. And we just have to accept that they are the new Irish. And that's going to be the case, because in 25 years' time, our population profile is going to be very, very different than it is today. In fact, all you have to do, Greg, is take a walk around Henry Street and O'Connell Street and Grafton Street in Dublin. Mm. Pop over to London in Oxford Street pop over to France,
yeah,
and you're going to be seeing
you.
Very different coloured faces.
That's exactly what a lot of people want to avoid, and that comment came just after you talked about different coloured faces. I didn't mean it in that regard. Leonard, Lisa, I mean, is that, that's precisely what it seems a lot of people in Ireland want to avoid, but Paddy says that it is inevitable.
Like, I think, we've always had migration and people coming into the country. I think the levels coming in from Ukraine have really exasperated matters. And it's just the numbers were of a different scale than we had before. But like, if you look around to our health service, our nursing care services, lots of different jobs in the country have been done by people that, are not, say, Irish born or maybe have moved into the country. So we've always had people coming in and obviously Irish people regularly go to other countries, and I think there's probably isn't a family in the country that hasn't a loved one somewhere in the world making a living and traveling and working elsewhere. So that has always been the case. But I think because of the numbers coming in from Ukraine, we've had to deal with a lot more in a short space of time. And that's as well along with a housing crisis in the country where there's pressures on accommodation that's making this an even more acute challenge for us. But, you know, there is, I think what Paddy has said around this being inevitable, people will always be coming in, and there are more conflicts now, and there are more challenges in terms of climate change where countries are becoming less habitable and more difficult to actually just survive, and people are migrating towards different climates. But I think our geography, to a certain extent, will make it more difficult to get here because we're an island nation, unlike France or Germany. But he's right when he points out about the UK, which has been quite interesting and difficult for their government to deal with, despite repeated assurances that the Rwanda policy, where they're going to apparently ship people off to Rwanda that come into their country, not one person has been shipped off to Rwanda yet. They can't get the legislation passed in the UK, and people are still travelling there because when people are desperate, they will find a way to get out of their desperate situation, and as we've seen, will risk their lives, and many will lose their lives trying to get to somewhere else just so they can survive and better themselves. But I think our challenge really in this country currently is the lack of suitable accommodation. It's the scattergun approach with which we've been dealing with it the past year. Mm. And I do think we'll move towards a more sustainable, less chaotic model in the year to come. And I do hope, and overall, I think people want to help as best they can. But the point that Leonard made about that there has to be fairness in how this is distributed across the state. And it's not fair if there are parts of the country that are shouldering what will be viewed as more than their fair share. And that is a challenge for government as well, to ensure there is fairness.
And often that is about services, it's about GPs, it's about hospitals, it's about schools. Go ahead, Paddy.
No, I'm just going to make the point here. You see, I think we're way beyond that because it doesn't matter about the state of the health service or the schools or the GPs and so on and so forth, or it doesn't matter about the fair distribution because they're going to come. I mean, if you look at a place at the town of Bradford in Yorkshire in England, I think the 80% of the population of it is Asian. If you go to certain boroughs or councils in South London, if you walk the streets there, you won't find any English being spoken. The street signs are in Urdu. So these people are going to come in large numbers, whether we like it or not, whether we think we have the resources for it, or we think about the fair distribution, they're going to come.
Some people would characterise that as, sort of like an invasion. In other words, that this country is going to be seen as a decent old spot from a climate perspective and what have you, and that you're saying that people are going to come in here that will change the demographic, maybe the religious makeup, the cultural makeup of the country, and you're saying that nothing can be done about that. I mean, it paints a... Yeah, I mean, might see it as enrichment. Others might see it as a very scary prospect that the country they know right now will not exist, in a couple of generations.
Yeah, and sorry to cut across, the reason why I'm saying that is, I have no proof of this, but the reason why I'm saying that is much bigger, more powerful countries than us fail to do it.
Well, you see what's happening in the United States. It is really unbelievable.
Holland, we are a country twice the land size of Holland, but they have four times our population, right? So there's plenty of room here for all these people to come. It's not a negative thing. It'll all settle down eventually, but it might take 50 years to do it. I don't see how we're going to be able to do something that other countries bigger and
with
more
immigration policies
weren't able to do.
With immigration policies, deporting people as soon as they arrive here if they're not documented, not signing up to initiatives where we take our share, things like that. But anyway, I'm trying to articulate texts that are likely to come in because it's just to try and. Okay, listen, we'll be back in 4 minutes and then we can run through to 10 with more from our guests. We're in the company of Paddy Rooney, Leonard Watson, and Senator Lisa Chambers. Leonard Watson, do you believe we're likely to see a general election in 2024? Lots of people around the world going to the polls. We'll be going to the polls too, and Udarus and Gaeltacht elections, Europeans, local elections. Would you like to see a general election? Pat the Cope Gallagher was on with us yesterday. He's convinced there could be a summer election here in 2024. Would you like that?
You don't think we're going to have election fatigue by then, European election, local elections? But you know what, Greg? Do you really want to see an election? It's just the whole, do you know, it's a whole cesspit of an election now. Elections have changed so much, and the social media probably is the one that it's just the diversity that happens around elections is just terrible. Plus, will a lot change? I know people have this thing that...
Well, we have to have them eventually. It's democracy.
Yeah, I know that. I know that. But you only have three elections in the 1 year. It's just going to be a lot, I think. But it's just the whole thing. You know, I think people have this thing in their head. Things are going to change dramatically after an election. And the truth is, it won't. Like, you know, the next government whoever there may get things done better, may do... But at the end of the day, civil servants run the country as... You know, it's they call the shots. Like, you know, the government can say what they want, but then there's a budget there. We don't have a magic tree of money, so there is only so much can be done. Well, at the end of the day, the people have a right to their vote. People want an election, but will things change dramatically after it? I don't know.
Right, okay. Well, we have to keep our fingers crossed, whether it's the same government returned or a new government. Lisa, would you fancy, for your party's perspectives, would you fancy an election in 2024? Because listen, at the end of the day, we're going to be going into general election mode, in 2024, because, you know, Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil want to assert themselves, you know, as different parties. So it's going to start in 2024, whether it comes to fruition or not, we don't know. What would you favour?
Yeah, I mean, for any politician, like, elections are kind of part and parcel of the job. And we've had about 4 years now without any elections. So it's going to be a busy year. We know we have the two referenda on the 8th of March. So we're going to the polls in March. Cool. We have the local European elections on the 7th of June. So we're going to the polls again in June. And I think I don't know this. And the only person that knows when the next general election is going to be, if he knows, is the Taoiseach, because he's the only person that can actually call an election before the due date of next year. So if he wants to go early, I think my prediction is that if you see any government TDs elected to the European Parliament and a by-election or by-elections require in November this year, it's quite likely in the speculation in Leinster House, because obviously we chat about this quite a lot, is that you'll have a general election before you'd have by-elections, because governments tend to lose by-elections. So my prediction would be that you'd have a budget and then you'd go to the country after that before you'd be required to have any by-elections. So I think it'll depend on how June goes. Like, we're in election mode now as political parties, because June, the local and European elections, because they're so close to the general election, even if it is early next year, it's still very close, will kind of set the ground for that general election. And parties will need to do well in June and have a good footing heading into the Dáil campaign. So parties are very focused on June. It'll be really important for us. And, you know, particularly the local elections, you know, that's your ground team. Having a good result in those elections is really crucial. And a lot of parties, ourselves included, we'll be looking to successful local election candidates, probably to go on Dáil tickets as well across the country in different places. So it'll be a busy year, and it's possible after two referenda and local and European elections, you know, people might be a little bit fatigued, but look, it's just the nature of it. We're going to have a busy electoral year regardless of what happens with the Dáil elections.
It's not just us. What do you think the makeup of the next government might be, Lisa? And I'm asking you just as a bit of a political anorak rather than a member of a particular party, if that makes sense.
Yeah, like we chat about this all of the time. There would be a school of thought that the current coalition would have a reasonable chance of being re-elected. I don't think you'll see, certainly you won't see Fianna Fáil running on a re-elect the coalition platform. I believe my party, what we'll do is we will run on our own manifesto, and try and seek our own mandate. And I think what the position will be, and we haven't had this conversation within the parliamentary party, but what I believe will happen is that we'll seek our own mandate, and we'll see what the numbers are afterwards, and we'll talk to everybody. I think Fine Gael will rule out Sinn Féin, and I think Sinn Féin will probably try and rule out Fine Gael and leave themselves open to others. So you'll either see the current coalition re-elected, maybe with or without the Greens, potentially maybe with the Labour add-on or a Sock Dems add-on, potentially, or you could see a Fianna Fáil Sinn Féin government. But I think certainly within my party, there would be at least half of our members and probably half the parliamentary party that would just not wear that. So I don't know is the honest answer, but they're the two. I think Fianna Fáil would probably be the kind of meat in the sandwich, in that we're the only.
Is that because
party.
Of ideological differences, or is it about getting into opposition and sort of re-establishing Fianna Fáil as a standalone party?
we don't want to be in opposition. We want to be in government. And I can never understand any party or politician heading into an election wanting to be in opposition, because I think that's completely useless. Like, you can't implement your policies or your ideas in opposition. So any party stepping out of the frame for government, I mean, what a wasted vote if you're voting for that party, because they clearly don't want to do their job. So I think every party should be aiming for government, will be my view on it. And no one should be stepping off the pitch. And if you're heading into a coalition government, always the challenge will be you'll have your manifesto on the things you'd like to do, but you won't be able to do all of those things. You'll have to compromise. And what my party leader has often said is that he doesn't see how he'd be able to agree a programme for government with Sinn Féin in terms of how will they actually agree a programme for government. So he's coming at it from a policy position. There will be people in my party that will be coming at it from an ideological position and say we just can't go in with Sinn Féin. And I'm sure that...
And as you say too, though, no more than you can't run an election, you can't run an election for opposition. Fianna Fáil don't want to be seen to be running an election to be second fiddle to Sinn Féin in a coalition. It's difficult to get the messaging correctly, isn't it? So you have to run the election as, no, we want to lead the next government, even though the reality is that when the numbers are finally counted. And who is to say? People presume after a general election that the current coalition is gone. I think that's really foolish to presume that just because there is an election that's the case, because strategically Sinn Féin have gotten it wrong before as well. And as again, you know, there's an awful lot of debate and questions to be asked in the run-up to election, which can change people's minds and views in many different directions. Paddy Rooney, would you like to see, though, is it the time right, 2024? It's the year of democracy globally. Should we just get this out of the way now?
Well, we haven't had a national election in this country since 2020, and now we're going to have a whole slew of them, and there's the presidential election somewhere in the queue there too. I don't know when. Is it the tail end of this year? Is it next year when that's coming off? So Irish politics now is a bit like what Lenin, the famous Russian revolutionary leader, said about Russian politics. You know, we have nothing happens in decades, and then we have decades within weeks. It's the prerogative, I suppose, of the Taoiseach to call the election. And it used to be, anyway, in old money that the Taoiseach would call the election when he deemed it to be most advantageous for his party to do it. Now, I suppose history is rife with examples about when Taoiseach got it wrong. I mean, Liam Cosgrove is supposed to have thrown away a winning hand in 77 because he went too early, and John Bruton stands out as making a bit of a mess of it, because if he had waited, it was 1997 and there was good times coming and he just went too early. And of course, Enda Kenny then was criticised in 2015 because he went too long. He let it go. He should have gone in the autumn instead of. So I don't know, do these things, does it get it right or whatever? However, Ivan Yates was on your programme a couple of days ago and he threw a few interesting pieces into the pot here. I suppose the Taoiseach has two opposite things being whispered into his ear. One is about do it early to head off the inevitable that Sinn Féin are going to have a dramatic increase in the number, because they had a very bad election in local election 2019 and they're going to have a good one this time. So they could potentially multiply their number of councillors in the country by three. And as Lisa sort of alluded to it there, they will actually be growing and give a profile to potential TDs. So the best way to deal with that is to cut the head of the snake and to go early. However, because of the volatility of the electorate out there, I'd say nobody has an idea about what's going to happen here, because Ivan Yates made the point again that somewhere people from their mid-40s or down, you know, and younger, how their parents voted for, how their family traditionally voted, how they even voted themselves in the last election is all gone now.
Is it? I'm not sure that's proven, though.
Well, we'll see. I'll tell you why now, because I have extended family members and people that I know that are coming out of particular houses that have voted in a long way, and they're voting very, very differently.
Well, you know what? I would love to hear.
Hold on a second. Some of these people are well-educated and in relatively good jobs, but Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael are not the top of their agenda anymore, with very valid reasons. They don't own a house, and even though they're in very good jobs, whatever that means, the prospects of them ever owning a house is dim, right? they have a problem with getting timely access to healthcare service, and that's not going to improve. They don't have a defined pension anymore, and that's not going to improve. They have a perception, whether it's real or imaginary, that all these new people coming into the country are getting preference to them in relation to welfare and housing and so on and so forth. They want to strike out and give somebody a bloody nose. Who are they going to go for? It's going to be Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil for the simple reason they've always been there.
I wish I had more time because we're getting into an interesting space there. Paddy Rooney, Peer Old Friends of Letterkenny University Hospital, thank you so much for joining us. Lisa, of course, go ahead.
Sorry, can I just say one thing? I'm aware that this morning that the Crease Law Community Association are officially opening their community links. Correct. Halls. I wish them well. I was up in Donegal last week. And I met the local priest there. So just, I know that's an ongoing situation there.
Step,
just went well this morning, yes.
Lovely stuff, Lisa. Yeah. Thank you very much indeed. Take care of yourself. That's Senator Lisa Chambers. And Hawaii 5-0 in the house this weekend, Leonard. You don't look a year over 55. I don't know what your secret is.
Life's been tough on me, Greg.
Happy birthday to you.